Hello, and thank you for coming here and listening also to me. My name is Mika Lundmark. I'm a PhD student in psychology of religion in Umeå, which is far up north of Sweden. The topic of this paper First of all, sorry for, I'm going to read mostly from the paper since English is not a language I'm very good in and I get very insecure and then I lost my track, so sorry for this. But the topic of this paper is the interdependence between religiosity and changed life situation due to cancer. And I will address this topic by presenting some preliminary findings from an ongoing PhD project in the field of psychology or religion, focusing on religiosity and cancer among practicing Christians living in North Sweden. Before I present some of the preliminary findings of this project, I like to give some background to the project and briefly outline my method. My interest in this topic of religiosity and coping, and especially the role of religiosity in coping with a cancer disease, comes from my double profession of being both a theologian and a registered nurse. And as a registered nurse, I have worked the last 16 years on an oncology clinic, night shifts. Since 7 years, I also work half-time at the theological department at university, and I'm teaching and dealing with this project. The project builds on some presumptions or hypotheses, if you like. One is that religiosity in the context of religion and coping is not just one coping tool, but religiosity can function in many different ways depending on what aspects of a particular person's religiosity we are talking about. To give one example that I will come back to later, prayers. I believe that praying on a psychological level can function in many different ways depending on the kind of prayers being conducted and when the prayers are conducted. Another assumption or hypothesis is that there is an interdependence between, on the one hand, religiosity, and on the other hand, the by cancer disease changed life situation, or for that matter, any kind of crisis. The aim of this project is therefore to investigate the function of religiosity seen as a variety of coping tools when struggling with a cancer disease, and how the changed life situation due to cancer affects religiosity. To address the first aim a bit more, in order to explore the function of religiosity in coping, we need to examine those aspects of religiosity that are important components in religious coping. Is there, for example, changes in the praying pattern for a person who has entered a life situation changed by cancer? In that case, which kinds of prayers are being more important, which ones are being less important for the individual in question? And what can that tell us about the role of religiosity in a coping perspective? And to raise an attendant question here that addresses the second aim, does this eventual changes in, for example, praying patterns affects the person's overall religious systems in any way? For example, that the person experienced that his or her relationship to God is affected by these changed praying patterns. And if this is the case, can it be that the changed religiosity by coping with cancer provides new ways of coping with the cancer, so we indeed can see a sort of dialectic or dynamic process here between religiosity and the cancer changed life situation? The design of the project is qualitative in the sense that the collection of material is building on semi-structured in-depth interviews with 20 practicing Christians living with cancer. And additional longitudinal data are collected from half of the group through follow-up interviews conducted over time periods varying between 5 months and 5 years. And the average age of my informants is 63.5 years old, the youngest being 48 and the oldest being 80. There is 9 males and 11 females. And when it comes to congregations, there is 4 that belongs to the Swedish church, and seventh to an organization called EFS, that is sort of a church inside the Swedish church, so they really can come together as one group. And then there is 6 Pentecostals, 1 Baptist, and 2 from a church called EFK, that is something roughly in between Pentecostals and Baptists. The average interview time totally that I spent with the informant is 2.5 hours. And as to the beginning of this month, 11 of my informants is still alive. And I have collected longitudinal data from 10 of my informants, where I have 2 interviews from 8 of them, 3 interviews from 1, and 4 interviews from 1. And as the longest I have followed an informant is 5 years. And approximately half of the group had palliative treatment when I met them for the first time, and half of the group had curative treatment. And I should also say that I got the informants by doctors and nurses at the oncology clinic that knew my inclusion criteria for this study, and then when they met a patient that they thought fit these inclusion criteria, they asked if they could hand contact information to a researcher, that is me, who was dealing with this project. And if they said yes, I got the contact information and I contacted them. And the study is ethically approved by an ethical committee. So, the protocol for the initial interview is designed to both collect narrative data on a more general level, life history, narrative tone, etc., and to answer specific questions about the informant's religiosity, especially focusing on prayer, ritual, and religious literature. But the protocol also allows for capturing other aspects of the religiosity. Via some words are just impossible to say in English. The specific word. Why I chose to focus on prayer, ritual, and religious literature in my interview protocol was because of my results from an earlier study on coping and prayer, where it was clear that prayers could function in different ways in the coping process, depending on, among much others, which kind of prayers the informant mainly used. In that study, it became clear that also ritual and religious literature, mostly than the Bible, but also other books, for example, daily meditation books, could be important in the coping process in various ways. And this also turned out to be consistent with other studies on the topic. And the project has now reached the analysis phase, where content analysis is applied on the transcription of the interview material. A preliminary content analysis has rendered in 19 main categories with subcategories. You can see the main categories here. And I work in 2 ways with this material. Content analysis, where the whole interview material is seen as one body, so to speak, and case studies, where I analyze the material from every informant individually. The former way of working gives a picture of patterns in the group, and the later way of working gives an idea of patterns for the individuals, especially over time, changes over time for individuals. And so far, the analysis of the material shows a clear dynamic interdependence between religiosity and the changed life situation due to cancer. When deconstructed in its many multifaceted components, it becomes clear that religiosity is not just one coping tool, but several, and different aspects of the informant's religiosity are differently important in different times during their struggle with cancer. This is, for example, very clear when it comes to the issue of my informant's prayers, which I will show a couple of examples on soon. I will also point at some other that I find intriguing findings in my material. I will address those categories that are marked red a little bit more here very soon. But I will start by showing some patterns of changes in the material considered as a group, and then illuminate some of these findings with case studies, where it also becomes clear how the interdependence between religiosity and changed life situation due to cancer works in a dialectic way. But first, some words on prayers. Some findings that are very manifest in my material is that the prayers changes in respect to frequency and in some cases also in style when the informants become sick. I have all of my informants. It's Mr. A, Mrs. B, Mrs. C, and so on. And you have them to the left, and here you have eventual changes in this group. Yes. These kind of changes are reported in 14 of my 20 informants. Only two report that their prayers have not changed in any way. And unfortunately, for this item, I lack data for four of my informants. Of the 14 that reports changes, nine say that they pray more than before, and three reports of praying less. Other changes that are reported is in style of prayers. The three informants that prayed less all stated that this was mostly due to being too exhausted to pray. If I compare the information in this category with the category that I call changes in the relationship to God, where I so far only have analyzed data from the 12 first informants, I can notice that all but Mr. E and Mrs. I reports of clear changes or even very strong changes in the relationship to God in the direction of coming closer to God, even though some of them do reports of periods where God feels far away. But that is just for periods, and then God comes back again. Mr. E, he says that the disease haven't changed his relationship, but there it must be noted that he really doesn't see his disease as a big problem in his life. And Mrs. I have had major changes in her relationship to God during earlier crises in life. Those changes in praying frequency and style is probably a good marker for changes in the relationship also to God. A rather clear trend in my material is that the degree to which the cancer disease changes the life situation and the relationship to God seems to depend on if the cancer disease is the first major crisis in the informant's life, or if he or she has gone through several crises before. For the informants where the cancer is the first major crisis, this seems to affect their life and their religiosity more than if this is the third or the fourth major crisis in their life. Another finding related to prayers that I would like to bring your attention to is that 15 of the informants in my study reports that intercession prayers are important for them. All of these 15 says in different ways that when they got sick, the importance of others' prayers got stronger. The three informants that reported praying less, that I mentioned earlier, also said that when they couldn't pray, the knowledge of others' prayers got important as a sort of substitute for their own lack of prayers. From who they received intercession prayers varied much, and this is what you can see here. I never asked about this actually, but they spontaneously told me whose intercession prayers they thought of as being important. And as can be seen on the table, there is a significant difference between those telling that the family prayed for them and those telling that the congregation did so. Just one indicates that both the family and the congregation prays for them. Otherwise, it seems to be an either-or situation. Now, I'm rather sure that the congregation prays also for those who have a family that prays for them. But that the person spontaneously tells about the family's prayers and not the congregation prayers probably says something of the importance of having a family praying for them. On a level of function, it is clear from this that prayers also have a social function, and this to know that someone thinks about you is important, and that it is important to have people to share the praying life with. Though still not finally analyzed, I suspect that the significant difference between these two groups here also is a hint that the congregation can substitute a family when there is a lack of family, or the family doesn't share the person's religiosity, or they simply doesn't have the kind of relationship where they share their praying life with each other. These examples of changes in patterns of prayers indicate at least two things. namely that prayers seems to have different kinds of functions, and some of these becomes more important during crisis. The clearest example so far in my analysis is the social function of intercession prayers, and religiosity, at least in the sense of religious activity, seems to change due to changed life situation. But at this point, I also must stress that much of the material is still to be analyzed in respect to many other kinds of praying activities, perceived relationship to God, religious literature, ritual, etc. One of the categories that has grown rather strong from the content analysis, on which I initially didn't think about as a possible category when I designed the interview protocol, was the coping function of strong religious experiences. 11 of my informants reports what I call strong religious experiences. And with strong religious experiences, I mean here visions, auditions, mental imageries, experiences of receiving knowledge from God on an intuitive level, out-of-body experiences, mystical experiences, or other kind of experiences that are strong and associated to their own religiosity. I have here excluded experiences of miracles or healing. So far I have chosen to work with that category separately. And then just an explanation. Capital letters means that these experiences of strong religious experiences have occurred after they become sick in the context of being sick. Small letters, then they report of experiences that they had earlier in their life. And those that are marked red are experiences that in an obvious way has had a huge impact on the coping process. So, most common here is visions, and 6 of my informants reports of visions. Of these, 3 reports of visions of Christ and 3 of visions of angels. And all reports but 1 or possible 2, the total amount of reports is 12, can be associated to a major crisis in life, like an accident, marriage, trouble, or a disease. And 6 of the informants reports strong religious experiences after they become sick in cancer, and where the strong experience is associated to the disease. In 4 of these cases, the strong religious experience have in an obvious way become an important part of the coping system, in the way that the informants give it a high significance and it changes their attitude to the disease and or it changes some aspects of the religiosity. And one such strong religious experience is the case of Mrs. L, a 48 years old woman with a relapsing breast cancer with lymphatic metastasis. She was treated for the same cancer 5 years earlier, but she has now got it back again when I meet her for the first time. She reports having had several mental imageries during her life, and since she became sick also visions. The evening before she should go to the hospital for a 5-day session of chemotherapy, she experienced great anxiety. At that moment, she got a mental imagery where she saw herself laying in a bed at the hospital surrounded with medical staff. But between her and the medical staff, Jesus stood transparent like this. And credit to one of my students that got inspired and made an aquarelle of this vision. It was obvious that no one else saw Jesus than Mrs. L, because the staff was lending through Jesus when they should do something with Mrs. L. And she took this as a sign that everything that happened in her should go through Jesus. After this, at several occasions during the treatment at the hospital, she receives visions where she actually lives this mental imagery, in the sense that when there are staff in the room, she sees Jesus, not as a mental imagery, but sees him transparent and always beside her bed, and so that the medical staff, when they should do something with, for example, her PowerPoint, give her cytostatica, they have to land through Jesus. And Mrs. L puts much significance to these visions. She sees them as signs that nothing can happen to her without it goes through Jesus. And the story of the transparent Jesus at the bedside is told during the initial interview with her, but this was also a very important topic in her narratives 5 months later when I did a follow-up interview with her. And what we see here is an example of how a strong religious experience helps to maintain a religious frame of references and are helpful also in the coping system by, among others, giving a strong feeling of security. And I've done some more analysis on other visions, and one you can read about in the latest number of Archive of Psychology Religion, and I will therefore skip it now because of time. It's about Mrs. B, who also had a vision of Christ that got very significant for her in different ways. A third example that I would like to bring your attention to in the context of strong religious experiences is Mr. H., a 63-year-old man with glioblastoma, grade 4, with multiple focus. In the beginning of a 7-week-long radiotherapy against his brain, he receives an audition in the form of a message from God that God should show his grace by performing a miracle and make him well again. This spiritual experience becomes extremely important for him. He tells other people about it, and it gives a certain meaning to his situation. He has got this disease for a reason, so that God can show his Almighty through healing him again. And he sees everything that happens to him through these lenses. The ups and the downs during his disease, his struggle, are given to him so that he will learn what it is to be sick in cancer, so he can better understand other people who are in his situation. And if I have interpreted him correctly, so that he can be of help to other people. His family also gets very involved in this as well. And every evening they gather in a room at the ward and pray together for his recovery. His odds to be healed again was with earthly measures 0. So I decided to follow this man with very short interval. The average survival with this diagnosis and age group was 6 months after diagnosis. And I could do 4 interview sessions during a period of 7 months. Since he slowly became more and more sick, and in accordance to what is known about strategies to cope with the negative outcome of religious coping, I was expecting to see signs of changes in the content of the expected miracle, like, it's a miracle that I have lived so long and I have lived now and feel so well. This kind of changes he would still believe in a miracle, but it would change what the miracle would actually be. But nothing of that kind. He remained convinced that a miracle would happen and that God would cure him until the last interview. And the last 3 months that he was living, it was not meaningful to do interviews with him since he was too affected by his brain tumors to adequately be interviewed. The experience of Mr. H can really be seen as a series of experiences. First it was the audition, and then he experienced a state of being in prayer without actually praying. Something inside him, he tells me, prayed, though he didn't do that. To have this kind of experience was a total new thing for Mr. H, though he had been a very active Pentecostal during his whole life. He had never experienced something like this, and he expressed very strong positive feelings about this experience and very much wanted to meet God in this way again. He says that a whole new dimension has opened up for him, and that he is very excited about what will come out of this, and that he was 100% convinced that a miracle would happen, and that I, the researcher, would also see this miracle. The experience added a new dimension to his religious frame of references, and a theoretical possibility of being cured by God through a miracle has become much more than a theory for him. It is already a fact that this will happen to him. And consistently with this, he acts as he will be cured. He tells people of this and sees the time at the hospital as a time where God can use him to meet other people and to evangelize. And from a coping perspective, the situation could be seen as something positive or negative, depending on what a good coping tool really is. If a good coping tool is something that helps to hold the anxiety away, then Mr. H's experience becomes an extremely powerful coping tool. But if it is about helping to come to grips with, for example, an inevitable death, then the case of Mr. H is an example of what I would say a bad coping tool, since it helped him in an imagination that turned out not to be true, and it hindered him and his relatives from adequately process the fact that he was dying with everything that lies into that. As a parenthesis, I will just mention that Mr. H also can serve as a good example of a person where their own suffering is seen as something that will be help to other people. 8 of my informants expresses the idea that their suffering will be other people to help, either, as in the case of Mr. H, that other people will see the glory of God when God performs a miracle, or that what they go through will give them knowledge that will be useful when they meet other people in their own situation later in life, or that they recognize that meetings with other people have occurred during, for example, their visits at the hospital, which have been important for those other people, and meetings that would not have occurred if my informant had not been sick. So, I'm running out of time here. I would like to say something here also. 7 of my informants express thoughts that in different ways comes down to the ideas about God being present in the work through the medical service, either through the hands of the doctor, for example in surgical interventions, or through medical interventions as chemotherapy or radiation therapy. And one such example that I will quote is from Mrs. K, a 49 years old artist and teacher suffering from lymphoma. She says like this: I was thinking, all those forms of treatment that I have received, that it is also a sort of a spiritual experience. If you talk about chemotherapy, that it is Christ himself that comes. During the second period of chemotherapy, it was very hard for me, but then it was a co-patient who was laying in the bed next to me who made me see that if our Lord had created everything, including these plants, he was getting the Cytostatica taxotere, which is a synthetic version of Taxol, which is made from jaw tree, Idegran. Then, of course, it can be so that it is through these plants that we receive the blessing of God and become well again. And this helped me much at that time, so I remember that the moment I thought that it is him that comes through the substance, and he is much more manifest, perhaps, and the substance in, yes, really, in the bloodstream, yes, in the whole organism of mine. And this also goes for the radiation therapy, that God himself is in the radiation beam. The case of Mrs. K can also serve as an example of how the struggle with a cancer disease can change a person's theology, which again can give new tools for the continuing coping with the disease. The first time I interviewed Mrs. K, she had recently finished a rather tough chemotherapy against her lymphoma, and though she was rather sure during the treatment period that she should die in her disease, the prospects for recovery was now good. The doctors thought that she should be totally recovered from her disease. During this interview, she told me how important the face of Christ had become for her since she got sick. As an artist, the face of Christ had always intrigued her and was a motif she had returned to in different ways during her life. Since she became sick, she started to notice the face of Christ in other people's faces more and more frequently. She refers to the story of the walk to Emmaus, where the disciples realize it was Jesus that walked with them just in the moment he disappears. So with her too. She always realizes it was Jesus just when the person in question have left the room or passed her at the street. This had been something that comforted her and a positive thing with her disease. 9 months later, I need one more minute, can I have that? 9 months later, I did a follow-up interview with her, and at that point in time, the picture with her disease was quite different. She had not become cured. On the contrary, the disease had very fast relapsed. It was now clear that nothing more could be done but palliative treatment. During this second interview, she tells how she thinks about God being in the substance, the quotation that I just gave you, in the chemicals and in the radiation beams. This idea is quite important for her during the second interview, and something she stresses with emphasis in this second interview. But notable, nothing of this could be seen in the first interview. It is therefore possible, with some accuracy, to sketch some lines in changes over time of her theology from the observation of the two interviews. In the first interview, we clearly see the idea that God is present in his creation, through his creation, in that he uses other people for his revelation to Mrs. K. She even sees him in the faces of other people. In the second interview, the idea has developed or changed to include also dead material and beings, so that God is revealing himself not only through other peoples, but also non-human material. This new theological insight becomes a powerful tool in her coping system and is a tool developed in a dialectical process between her religious frame of references and her by cancer changed life situation. And with these examples of the interdependence between religiosity and changed life situation due to cancer, I end my paper. I'm thankful that you wanted to listen to me.